It's championships when you've got Jeff Blair.
We have a busy Friday ahead of us. Lots of hockey and NFL football with Boomer Esiason joining us later. We've even got a little Olympics chat tossed in with Scott Russell. But off the top, we're going to delve deeper into the 2014 Toronto Blue Jays season and ask what 2015 holds for the team with Paul Beeston, the president and CEO of the Blue Jays. And, well, and then we'll take your calls right up to 10 o'clock. This season was something of a tease as far as I was concerned. The promise provided by a six-game lead after a torrid May, the reality of a second-half collapse, and the tantalizing notion of an organization that is moving forward with the starting rotation that could potentially be four-fifths homegrown in 2 years. But you know what? I don't think that's enough for Blue Jays fans, or at least the majority of them. I think this team, frankly, needs to convince its fans that it is serious about making the playoffs in 2015. Let's see if Paul Beeston can begin that process this morning.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
All right, as I said, we have a busy Friday. Let's not waste time. We are joined by the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mr. Paul Beeston. Good morning, Mr. Beeston.
Good morning, Mr. Blair. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Enjoying the playoff baseball. Four games today.
Yeah, it's going to be great, starting right at noon. So you know what? The Tigers have got themselves a little bit of a challenge, but it could make it pretty interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a pretty big start for Justin Verlander. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Hey, Paul, let's get the messy logistics out of the way first, because I'm a big fan of getting that done early.
Yeah, sure you are.
As you well know. Have you signed a new deal to be president and CEO of the Blue Jays yet? And if so, can you tell us for how many years it is?
Did you kind of phase into this question? I just thought you might. I thought you might do that at the end.
No, that's McCowan.
I did not know that was going to be. The answer to the question is that, you know, I'm here as long as Rogers wants me here. You know, I enjoy what I'm doing. I've never worked other than through a contract, but I don't work through contracts. You know, we have a job to do here. Our goal is to win the World Series and be in the playoffs, where we're not right now. At such time as they don't want me here, I'm sure they will suggest to me, you know, maybe it's time to work out some type of an arrangement where we have an organized phase out. But at the present time, the answer is I'm here, and that's kind of a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year.
Well, are you in the last year of your deal with Rogers?
Well, I signed something, but, you know, to be very frank with you, I mean, it just had a term on it, you know, and to be
right.
So at the present time, I guess you would say that I'm in the last year of it. I think that's fair. That's not wrong. But at the same point in time, we all know how these work in sports. Mm-hmm. You know, when they don't want you here, they're going to tell you, and if you don't want to be here, you know, you're going to leave. I mean, so it's as simple as that. But I like the people I work for. I like the people I work with. They've given us everything that we need, so I consider myself very fortunate. And so, you know, I have no intention in the present time of changing what I've got. But, you know, for how long, I have no idea. So if it was a one-year deal, it was a five-year deal, if it was a 10-year deal, or if it was a one-month deal, it's not really going to change how I'm going to work.
When you talk about it being a phased-in process, that would make us tend to think that you might be consulted and who eventually would be your replacement.
Well, I would think that they might ask me what my opinion would be of what we're looking for, you know, who is out there, what attributes that person should have. I think that over the years, you know, I've got a pretty good idea of what type of person you would look for as the president of the baseball team. I would think that they would ask me, but, you know, it'd be entirely up to them.
Mm-hmm. Paul Beeston joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. It's safe to assume that both Alex and John are back next year, correct?
Well, I mean, I think that you can read into that. I mean, Alex, I can say for a fact, is back. I mean, you know, unless he's leaving. I mean, it's just like what we're talking about myself.
Right.
And I don't think he's going anywhere. I mean, you know, he hasn't finished what he started out to do. And, you know, I'm 100% supportive of him. I think that he has done a very good job. I think we're now seeing the benefits of what happened with his development or of his investment in the farm system. And I think that, you know, that's only going to be better for the future. You know, if people want to be critical of the moves that were made last year, that was done with everyone's encouragement and everyone's input. The trades were made both with Miami and with the Mets for Ari Dickey. I mean, we were all, you know, like, let's get it done. So, you know, you don't walk away and say if they don't work out the way you think they're going to work out that, you know, he was out there on his own, because he surely wasn't out there on his own.
And I guess as far as we know, we could read into John Gibbons coming back next year.
Yeah, I think you can read into that.
Okay. What is it about Alex that allows him to retain your confidence, you know, despite the fact that the team hasn't made the playoffs?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I work right beside him. I know how hard, A, he works. I know how his mind works. I think that right from the very beginning when he came in, Jeff, you know, he wanted to really break down the team, which he did do. You know, he invested in the farm system. He invested in international. I see and I have the opportunity to talk to him on a daily basis at the minimum once, but maybe 10 times in that time, because our offices are beside each other. I just know that he is going in the right direction. And, you know, we were trying to build something that was sustainable. Mm-hmm. We may have fast started, I mean, you know, by, you know, the 2013 moves. But nevertheless, when you start looking at what we did then, it was to give back to the fans, you know, and Rogers made the commitment. They gave the dollars. We did what we wanted to do. And, you know, it didn't work out. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, one-year contracts that we were purchasing at that time.
Right.
And so this year, I mean, was the disappointing year. You can't blame the injuries because everyone got injuries. You know, we had two bad road trips, one in July and one in August and one in September. Absent those two road trips, you know, we might have gone down to the last day or two, and that's really what we're trying to do. So we won 83 games this year, won 74 the year before. We got to build on that. We got to be in the playoffs next year. But, you know, that's got to be the goal. And, you know, anything other than that, you know, is going to be kind of unacceptable.
How would you describe what happened this year? And what did you learn about this team? Paul Beeston, baseball fan, what did you learn about this team?
I learned that it's a roller coaster ride, and I think right from the very beginning we had weaknesses. I mean, we all know what they are, whether it was any position in the infield, whether or not it was the relief pitching, whether or not, you know, it was injuries. We did have a lot of depth, but what we did find out about ourselves is that we have some young stud pitchers that are ready to come along. And from that point of view, I think everyone looking for pitching, I mean, I think that gives us a strength going into the future. And so, you know, we get Lurie back. I mean, I hate the idea of using injuries as an excuse. But, you know, at the very end of the day, you know, we had a number of guys out for a number of games. Mm-hmm. And whether it was Edwin out for, you know, 5 weeks, whether it was Brett out for, you know, 100 games, whether it was Morrow out for as long as he was out. I mean, we just seemed to hit these injuries. And Melky Cabrera going out for effectively the month of September was another one.
Paul, TV ratings went through the roof this year. Radio ratings killed. Yet attendance at the Rogers Center fell. Now, look there. I mean, I spent 2 weeks in Manitoba and Northwestern Ontario. I saw a ton of Blue Jays merchandise. I went into bars. The games were on every bar and every restaurant around there. How do you get people out to the ballpark?
You see, I actually think, Jeff, and that we did very well this year. We almost drew 2.4 million people. Mm-hmm. You know, last year we did 2.5, but that was a huge advance sale. This year, because of the way that we performed in 2013, people took a wait-and-see attitude where they're going to buy tickets. Remember one thing. We had 13 sellouts this year. Mm-hmm. Last year we had 6. You know, I didn't think the attendance was bad at all. I don't even apologize for it. 2.4 is not bad for a team that, you know, people are waiting to prove it. And if we'd had a really good September, had we carried on in that road trip to Baltimore and the Yankees, you know, that last week against Seattle would not have been 15,000. It would have been 30.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all of a sudden the attendance gets back to where it was. It's a slow climb to the top, and we went very quickly last year because I believe we went from 2 million to 2.5. We backed off a little bit this year, but I'm expecting to go further next year, up again next year. So I'm not worried about the attendance. I think the attendance is pretty solid. And more importantly than that, I mean, the people were in the ballpark. Those are real numbers. And more importantly than that, the people are young. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is go in and walk around the stadium, and you see how young they are. They talk about an old demographic for the games, but I was saying to my wife last night, we were watching the Baltimore game, when they were panning the stats, that's a young group of people that go to the games.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that that baseball crowds are starting to get a little younger, especially here. And, you know, all I have to do is talk to the security people.
No question.
And they'll tell you, seriously. They'll tell you.
On a Saturday, it's a family atmosphere. And, you know, you've been down here when they run the bases after. I mean, you say, where did they come from? I mean, it's just a wave of people coming in from the right field gate.
You know, anecdotally, I mean, I can't tell you how many people I had tell me that the Gardner construction prevented them from going to games. Plus, and then, of course, on the weekend, you got the stuff that's always going on Lakeshore. I mean, at times, Paul, there seems to be a total lack of awareness on the part of people at City Hall that there's a pretty good chance 40,000 people might be going down to the Rogers Center on Saturdays or Sundays. You've come out in favor of John Tory as mayor here. Do you think he'll be a little more sympathetic to these issues? And as an aside, I'm just wondering, is there any thought about starting games later, you know, around 7:30 because of traffic?
Well, there is a couple. I mean, there's two arguments to be made there, Jeff. Let's go to number one. I mean, there's one thing that we've got to acknowledge is that the city is a very vibrant city right now, and certainly the things that we want to happen don't happen, but, you know, it might be a marathon downtown. It might be, you know, what they have for Illuminato. It might be the eating on the Danforth. It could be a lot of different things, and there's so many things that go on. But last week, you know, we had the Gardner closed from Friday night till Monday morning. You had a soccer game on. You had the Hockey for Cancer down at Ontario Place. You had a baseball game on, and you had a hockey game on. It didn't seem to make much sense, but then again, you say to yourself, when are they supposed to do it?
Mm-hmm.
When could they do it? You know, and so you start looking around, and I don't know if there's ever an ideal time, so you work with them. But this has been ever since the very beginning. This has been ever since the beginning of the Blue Jays when we were down at Exhibition Stadium. We always had problems with the traffic, and, you know, we always said it didn't make sense. So we work with them. We have to use rapid transit. We maybe have to do a deal with the TTC. We have to do a deal with GO. We got to get people in. But, you know, people found a way to get here, too.
True. Paul Beeston joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Paul, we need to talk a little bit about payroll and the relationship with the owners of the team and, frankly, this station, my employers and your employers.
Exactly.
Thank you. You and Alex have been, I mean, you've been a little bit coy when it comes to payroll, especially how much money is available for in-season moves. And I understand, look, this is a publicly traded company, and nobody has to throw open the books to anybody. But, I mean, the message that a lot of fans seem to be getting is we're confident we can get money if we ask for it. Yet I think a lot of fans will take a look at what happened in the off season, what happened in spring training with Irvin Santana, what happened at the trade deadline, and they're going to say they haven't seen a lot of tangible evidence of it this year. Were there moves this year that ended up not being made because of finances? And as kind of as an aside to that, would you agree that the fans, maybe even those of us in the media, need a little more clarity as to the team's payroll and flexibility?
Maybe they need clarity, but, you know, when you start looking at, we are at $135 million, $137 million. We're not at, you know, at the $90 million range. We're not at the, you know, the $60 million range. It's been escalating. It went to 90, it went to 125, went to 137, and you know it's going higher next year.
Mm-hmm.
I can say unequivocally, and I have told Alex this, if you want to go, and I will use names, and I'm probably in trouble using names, but, you know, they have been traded subsequently, but for a John Lester or for a David Price, and you are picking up those contracts, I will flat out guarantee you that we can get the money from Rogers. Okay, Rogers has been very supportive, very understanding, right along. But if you're not prepared to do the deal, you know, it's not going to happen. Okay, so, you know, it had nothing to do with money. But we do believe in, you know, the term of the contract. And, you know, people can take issues with it. People can take all the issues they want. But, you know, the five-year deal is where we stand right now. That doesn't limit us to going out and get a ball player that, you know, is going to cost us $600. And, you know, if we can make the case next year for getting somebody that falls within those frameworks that we have, I don't have any problem thinking the Rogers give us some money. None, zero. And they've been absolutely terrific. And you may laugh at it. You may say, you know, you're going to have to prove it. Well, you know, they've proved quite a bit so far with what they've given us, and they haven't said no.
Can you get Melky re-signed this winter?
And love to.
What do you think? What does your gut tell you?
Well, everything that tells me that he wants to be back here and we want him, so that should put you in the deal zone to begin with, don't you think?
Well, why wasn't he signed mid-season the way Edwin was?
Alex, that one.
Okay. That's not a quote unquote an edict from ownership
not.
Or anything.
Absolutely, 100% no.
Okay. Paul, you've been pretty clear about the Rogers Center and the need for natural grass in there. What's the status regarding natural grass? And just to be clear, you are getting new artificial turf for next season, correct?
That's 100% correct.
Okay.
And that's 100% correct. And we want grass for 2018. The grass is a huge issue, more than everybody thinks from an engineering point of view. Something I've learned over the last while we're working with the University of Guelph. We can get the light that's necessary to grow grass. We can get the the water that's necessary to put on the grass. Grass needs air currents, apparently. This is something I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got the way this has been designed, we're going to have to put in big fans, and, we want to make sure that it can work.
Mm-hmm.
I was mentioning this to Doug Melvin and Gordy Ash, and, they said that they had to put in big fans at their stadium in Milwaukee, because it wasn't growing. It was dying. So we do have some challenges, but that's the goal. That's the, we see no reason why it's not going to happen. But we have the turf for next year, and the goal is to have the grass here accommodate the Argos up until that point in time, and we'll go from there.
So when are you looking at grass, roughly?
2018.
Is there a chance you might have an all-star game here in 2018 if you get grass?
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
Because I was just looking.
It would be nice. It's about time. We had it. The last time we had it was 1991.
Right. It's been at 24 different venues. It's been in Anaheim at least twice, Pittsburgh twice. Are there plans to make a push for that?
There's a plan to make a request for it. Absolutely. I mean, what's the word? Socialized? Is that the word that people
yes.
use these days? We've socialized it. Let me just say that. But we've not put in a formal application at the present time.
Is there any concern on your part that, you've got a new commissioner in Rob Manfred, and we're led to believe that you were among a group of owners who originally balked at his hiring, and I'm not going to get into the politics of that, but is there any concern on your part that he might look less favorably on the Jays because of that?
Zero. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I hired Rob Manfred back in 1997. I brought him to New York. He was a lawyer in Washington at that point in time, put him in charge of labor. Rob knows, the decision. We had two people in the commissioner's office, and we had an owner in Tom Werner. There were three people.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in the game a long time. You knew all of them. I mean, it was a non-win situation.
Right.
Rob Manfred will be a terrific commissioner. Let's go on the record and say that. He will be a terrific commissioner. He has got an organized mind. He articulates very well. He's got great integrity. And you know what? This was not a matter of taking one guy over the other, but you had to vote for someone. And, so I'm happy for Rob. I mean, everyone will support him. He will do an unbelievable job. And, we go back too far that I don't think that we have to worry about it. And that is not in his DNA. Vindictiveness is not in his DNA. He's mentioned it to me a couple of times that we never supported him.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think we just walked away from that one? But I keep on just going back and say, well, Rob, you wouldn't be here if it wasn't for me because you'd still be a lawyer in New York, in Washington. So I'm taking credit for you.
Last question before he lets you run, Paul. In an interview he did on Primetime Sports, John Gibbons suggested that the clubhouse, and I'm kind of loosely paraphrasing, he said it wasn't the closest clubhouse he'd been around. At other times he's described the Jays as being dead-ass to some of us and full of extreme personalities, which was kind of my personal favorite. You've been around good and bad teams, and you know that building a winner isn't always a linear process. There were some tough times leading up to 92-93. In your gut, how close do you think this team is to winning, and are you convinced the right clubhouse culture exists?
Yeah, I mean, what is the right culture? The culture really exists in winning clubhouses. You know that as well as I do, whether it's dressing rooms, clubhouses. You can have the most disparate group of people, whether it was the Yankees or whether it was the Oaklands or whether it was, whoever it might be, or we can go back to the family that was in Pittsburgh. It doesn't matter as long as you're winning. The fact that John knows about it, the fact is he's got to do something about it because he is the leader. He is the person from management that works with those players and sets the tone. The tone comes from the top. The tone is one of collegiality, but at the same point in time, you can't put in 25 people and expect all 25 people to be the same. You're going to have different personalities. The question is to manage it. And, as I said to John, I'd read this quote, which I thought was great on Casey Stengel, who said that the secret to managing is keeping the five guys that hate you away from the five guys who are undecided.
Mr. Beeston,
that's
always
got to do.
As always, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay, Jeff.
Take care.
Ciao.
That is Paul Beeston. He is president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays. And, you know, look, a lot of issues to deal with the team. And I think it's pretty clear that the people around the Blue Jays know that I think there needs to be a little better communication with the fans. And I truly believe, I use the word clarity. I don't even know if clarity is the right word. I mean, you can only get, you know, you're only obligated to give people so much clarity. But I do think that in the very least, the Blue Jays need to be, I think they need to let fans know in a little greater detail where the payroll's going. And I guess at the end of the day, the proof's going to be in the pudding, right? I mean, we can sit here and tell you something. Paul Beeston can sit here and tell you something. But at the end of the day, you need to see a player come in. You need to see a long-term contract. You need to see some change in the field. I think that's pretty safe. We're going to take our break right now and come back. The numbers are 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Join the conversation on social media. Use the hashtag Blair Show. My Twitter handle is SNJeffBlair. Let this marinate. We'll come back and talk about it. This is the Jeff Blair Show, and this is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I can say unequivocally, and I have told Alex this, if you want to go, and I will use names, and I'm probably in trouble using names, but, you know, they have been traded subsequently, but for a John Lester or for a David Price, and you are picking up those contracts, I will flat out guarantee you that we can get the money from Rogers.
That was Paul Beeston, president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, in our interview at the top of the hour. A couple of takeaways from it. And it's interesting, just taking a look at some of the responses on Twitter. A lot of people are wondering, I think, whether or not the media is making a bigger role about payroll, or making a bigger deal about payroll than the fans are, which is, it's an interesting point in the discussion. Maybe we need to have at some point. My thinking about payrolls, I think, when the Blue Jays went all in 2 years ago, and they did go all in 2 years ago, when payroll jumped up, when they went after R.A. Dickey and made that multiplayer deal with the Miami Marlins, fans and fans were told there's a three-year window, we're going all in. The fans brought into that because there was tangible evidence. Now, it may not have worked out. In fact, it didn't work out the way the Jays wanted it to, but hey, the evidence was there. Ownership's going all in. They made acquisitions. They got proven players. Didn't work out. I think the issue last year was that most people, when they view a three-year window, just don't assume that the team that's put together in the first year is going to win the first year, second year, third year. They assume there's a gradual process. Stuff happens. Guys get hurt. Guys decide they don't like to be here. Guys leave as free agents, whatever. So Josh Johnson left. You know, that's part of business. And fans didn't see any subsequent follow-up. So I think that's where the confusion comes in. As much as we talk about payroll, I think that's where the confusion comes in. Fans said, okay, Alex did all this. It didn't work out. He's got to address this issue and this issue and this issue. And those issues weren't addressed during the year. Then in season, even when the team was playing well, everybody in this station, we were all telling you, hey, this is great, but boy, they still need another infielder. And at some point, the rubber's going to have to hit the road with Colby Rasmus. At some point, Alex is going to need another outfielder for the upcoming season as well. And there was no move toward that. So I think as much as, I mean, we kind of use payroll as a catch-all for everything around the team, right? Payroll and an increase in payroll suggest to fans that ownership is taking steps and management's taking steps towards winning. So when we use, you know, payroll and salary out there, I think fans and media look at that as a sign of maybe not team health, but a sign of ownership commitment. And I think a lot of fans looked at what the Jays did last year. Saw the payroll go up and then didn't see a rise this year. And there was an immediate suspicion. Part of that comes, frankly, from the fact that this is a city that hasn't won a great deal in any sport. And that this organization hasn't made the playoffs since 1993. So, I mean, the trust that was built up 2 years ago with Alex's moves was a little tenuous. And I think it needs to be kind of regenerated a little bit this offseason. Dave in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What was your takeaway from Paul Beeston's interview?
Okay, well, you know, Paul is a really cool customer. And I think that there's a lot of gnashing of teeth. As a fan, I think every fan could agree with this. If you were watching this season, there were six games where you said, I can't believe they didn't win that game. That they had that in the bag. At least six. They win those six, and they're in the wild card. So I don't think they have to make huge moves. I think they have to either sign or replace Melky. When they played with Ghost and Pilar in the outfield, when Colby was out, they were great. I don't think that they're great players necessarily, but I think that they have enough there. And I know the situation may change next year with the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Rays improving, but I think there's a solid core there. And, you know, you replace a bat in the outfield or you keep it, and maybe you add one piece. I don't think that there's a lot to be done there. That's my feeling, that they're not that far.
Yeah, Dave, I appreciate the call, and I think a lot of people feel that way because of the relative strength of the starting rotation, and it doesn't matter so much how you got to the point, but the fact is the Jays are at that point right now where they've got some cost-effective, young, homegrown starting pitching, and I mean, I've hammered on and on and on about this all the time, and you guys know that, and people who are baseball fans know that. I mean, cost-effective, young, starting pitching, that's the foundation. Ultimately, if you have that, you can spend your money elsewhere. And if you have that, you have a little more certainty. So that's why I keep pounding on and on about that. And the Jays have that. I'm not saying they're all going to be Cy Young Award winners. I'm not going to say they're going to run out guys that are routinely going to have a whip of under one or anything like that. But it looks pretty good. The pitching future looks pretty good for this organization, to the point where they can at least contemplate moving Mark Burley or R.A. Dickey in the offseason. But I get Dave's point. It's not like this is a team that finished 100 games out of the playoffs. But I still think, you know, with each passing year, and this is another thing that we really don't touch on it. It's one thing to say that there's a 3-year window, but when you don't step through that window with each passing year, your core players get older. Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Reyes, getting older. And I'll tell you what, there isn't a person around that organization. There isn't a person around the Jays organization, whether they're in management or uniform personnel, that isn't concerned about Jose Reyes' defensive issues on turf, his ability to stay healthy, and his ability to play the type of defense that a contending team needs. I mean, there just isn't. You can go through everybody on that team, whether it's manager, coaching staff, general manager, assistant general manager. There's differing levels of concern, but there are levels of concern nonetheless. So, I mean, you've had your 2 years, you've added two more years onto Jose Bautista, two more years onto Edwin Encarnacion, you've had Jose Reyes here for two more years and you haven't won. I think that's something you have to keep in mind. I mean, I wouldn't say time's a wasting, but you know what? Time's a wasting. Robin Woodbridge, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
Good, man.
I listened to this whole interview with Mr. Beeston and you, and I got to say one thing. It's a bluff. It's easy to talk like a shooter and then hide. Where was Mr. Beeston when the Jays were free-falling? If you want the best, you can get the best.
That's
whether
a good point.
Whether it's payroll, making a trade. We need a guy like Mr. Lewicki to run this team and show the passion and heart. He was hiding, and he comes in after the season when the Jays are eliminated, it's a bluff.
Well, I don't know if I agree with you completely. And I mean, I made that point. I think people needed to hear from Paul Beeston in season a lot more. I don't think it's fair when a general manager has to answer questions all the time about payroll. And because the fact of the matter is, we can ask Alex all we want about payroll, but Alex answers to Paul Beeston and Paul Beeston answers to the people above him. And I thought at times this year that Alex was kind of left out there. And I don't pretend to know how, maybe Alex is fine with that. Maybe that's part of the relationship. Maybe it's a Paul, don't worry, I got this, relax. But yeah, I agree with you. I would like to have heard a little more from Paul during the season. But again, I don't know. I'm beginning to wonder. Maybe we'll do a call topic on this next week, Travis. Do we in the media, a general call topic, do we make too much of payroll? Maybe we're fixated on it. I don't know. Maybe fans don't care. Fans just kind of assume that everybody has a budget and that you live within it and just win within your budget. I don't know. James in New Brunswick, you're in Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, Jeff.
How are you?
Pretty good. You asked the questions, what would show the Jays were committed to next season?
Yes.
And for me, you know, they went all in a couple years ago with the trade with Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something, you know, show they were all in again was be getting a second baseman and an outfielder for next year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'd be hard to do. I don't know what's out there, but, you know, that would show us again that they're really committed.
Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, James, and thanks for the call. The first thing that comes to mind is a lot of people are waiting to see what happens with Melky Cabrera. And my concern with Melky is that I absolutely believe Melky wants to be here. I think he loves Toronto. I think he loves the clubhouse. I think he loves his teammates. But he's a ball player. He's a professional athlete. He's a businessman. Melky loves money. And Melky's going to go where the money is. I don't think he'll give these guys a hometown discount. And frankly, you know, I don't even know if the Blue Jays actually expect that. I'm concerned, and I still don't have an answer that satisfies me as to why there was not a deal done midseason with Melky. And I don't know how much talking there was. I know that Peter Greenberg, who is Melky's agent, his agency and Alex, they got a great relationship. He represents Jose Reyes as well. There's a mutual respect. There's an element, I think, frankly, I don't, either man won't say this, but I think both Peter Greenberg and Alex view each other as well as somebody they can sort of bounce things off of, get a sense of what other GMs and other owners are thinking. And so, that's obviously a positive, but at the end of the day, Melky's going to go where the money is. And I've got to think that Alex Anthopoulos has an idea right now what the market for Melky's going to be, what the dollar figures are going to be, especially if you're going to limit him to a 4 or 5 year contract, which it appears the Jays are. To me, it would have been easy to get this deal done in season. And I've thrown this out there a couple of times, and I'm not casting aspersions on Melky. But given his background with PED use and given the suspension, there are people who are going to wonder why a deal hasn't been done. Do the Jays know something they're not letting on? And I tell you what, I've told the story a couple of times, I know, but I think it bears repeating again. I've spoken to a couple of scouts who were scouting Melky late in the season at Blue Jays games. They were specifically there to scout Melky, and they're asking that question. The guy's playing great on artificial turf. He's a great offensive player. Low maintenance swing. There's a lot to like about Melky's game. He's playing well for them. Why the hell haven't they signed him yet? Brad in Kitchener, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, good morning, Jeff. I think everybody in Toronto's got to relax a little bit. I mean, we've got a Maple Leaf view of the Blue Jays, unfortunately.
Oh, God, I love that. We're gonna cut that and keep that. We're gonna replay that. We've got a Maple Leaf view of the Blue Jays. That is outstanding. Did you work on that?
No, actually, it just came to me anyways. But,
no, it's good. Continue.
But what I'm thinking is, as Bob McCallum says, the unholy alliance that owns MLSE and Rogers owning the Blue Jays, I can't see Rogers wanting to be part of two losing operations in the biggest city in Canada. As far as I'm concerned, I don't know what's going on with Melky Cabrera. I'm sure that AA has talked to him. I'm sure that there's something going on. Either he knows something that we don't know. We don't know what's going on. And as far as I'm concerned, I can't see Rogers sitting back and letting the Blue Jays fumble around. I think they want to put this team up where it belongs, and that would be in first place. They almost did it this year. And just because they didn't sign all these big names at the trade deadline, when you look back on it, it was a good move on his part. A lot of times, stuff you don't do comes back as the best move that you could have made. I mean, look at the Leafs over the years.
Yes, and Brad, and the other thing too, and thanks for the call, and I love that we have a Maple Leaf view of the Blue Jays. And I've said this often: everything we do in Toronto sports is through a blue and white prism. It's viewed through the prism of the Leafs can't win. And I think that really colors our thinking about a lot of things. You know, the difficulty in discussing trades that were or weren't made at the trade deadline or any time, we just don't know. When Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hammel were dealt to Oakland, a lot of people were upset. Why didn't he get at least one of them? What was the holdup? You know, well, then it turned out that the Cubs, quote unquote, wanted both Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez, which of course is a non-starter. Problem with that is, people I speak to around the Cubs made it very clear the reason the deal wasn't made was because the Cubs wanted to get position players. That was the utmost important thing for them. They were going to use those pitchers to get position players. And the Jays didn't have a lot of position players that interested them because the Jays traded a lot of those position players the year before in order to get the players from the Miami Marlins and in order to get R.A. Dickey. Had the Jays still had a Travis d'Arnaud, then perhaps they get a deal done. So my point is this. If you've got three great young pitchers and you want to make a trade with me, and I'm saying to you, hey, I love your young pitchers, but I need an outfielder. And you don't have an outfielder, we don't got a deal. So there's always a difficulty in sitting around and trying to figure out why a deal wasn't made. A deal only gets made if you've got what the other guy wants. And it doesn't matter if you think that what you have is really, really, really good and better than what another team eventually offers in a trade. The other team doesn't, if you're not addressing their needs, they're not going to make the deal. Tom of Waterloo, you're in Sportsnet 590, the fan.
Jeff, why do we love Tampa? They never spend money. All they do is have young starting pitchers. I mean, they had to finish last for 10 years to get the first pick every year. To get those kids, and now they're running out, but, you know, they pick up leftovers. But everybody loves this team. I mean, Madden didn't win this year when he didn't have those starters, did he?
No, you know what, the answer, Tom, the answer is really easy. I mean, the city wants a winner. This city wants a winner. This is a big city with a lot of sports fans who pay a crap load of money to go to games, who put up with lousy traffic to go to games. They listen to the games. They watch the games. They talk about the game. They just want a winner. And I think at the end of the day, that is Toronto sports. You want a winning team, and everything's viewed through the prism of the Maple Leafs. Just because the Maple Leafs, and Beeston talks about this in the past, it's amazing how if the Maple Leafs win, everybody in the city feels better. And it's really the one team that we could say that about. Jake in Wasaga, you're on Sportsnet 590, the fan.
Hi, Jeff. You're absolutely 100% right when you say the proof will be in the pudding. You know, at this point, me personally, I don't believe what he says. You put your money where your mouth is. when they say all in at $120 million, my God, they should have been at $120 million years before that. And if that's all in, then what's Detroit Tigers?
Okay, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. You can't blame... I mean, you've got to remember, Rogers hasn't owned the Blue Jays since 1993, right? I mean, you can't blame these guys for what Interbrew did, and not raising salary and not raising payroll.
We're talking since 2001, Jeff.
It's since 2001, exactly. But at the other, again, I'm taking the point of view of a publicly traded company. At that time, the Canadian dollar wasn't doing all that well, and the Jays were losing. I mean, I think Godfrey said the Jays lost something like $75 million their first year.
You know, Jeff, you know the problem I have with this is that there's no entrepreneur down there that goes, you know what, if we spend more money, we'll pack this place. You know, like they're doing in Los Angeles with the Dodgers. They don't have anybody. What do you mean they?
Because I mean, it's not if. What do you mean? There's no. You're talking about Rogers or Toronto business in general. Because you're right about that. I mean, the only which individual in this city is Larry? I guess Larry Tannenbaum's the only guy, the only quote unquote individual who stepped up and put his money into a team, right? I mean, the Rogers family have, but it's a publicly traded company. You're talking about one guy who's just going to go and say, "All right, here it is." The hell with this. Increase the payroll to $200 million. Let's build a new ballpark.
That's the problem when you have a corporation running it. You know, they lack the vision of an entrepreneur that goes, look, put the money in. The people will show. And hopefully Will Rogers will see that even this year. The 2.4 million people is actually pretty darn good when you're not spending the money like Detroit and other teams. But here's the problem I have.
Well, let me just say, I'll let you finish, but let me just say this too, because you seem like a smart guy. You do realize that a company like Rogers has more responsibilities than, you know, the Detroit Tigers owned by Mike Ilitch. Mike Ilitch doesn't have shareholders to answer to. I'm just throwing that out there. I mean, you do agree that. Okay.
I understand. Pulling in $5 billion. An extra $20 million is gum on the bottom of their shoe. But here's the problem I have. Is when you see that they're not moving forward with putting grass, and when he says, "Oh, I'd want to have grass in 2018, but we might have to bring in some fans." What are you kidding me? They build stadiums in Commonwealth.
Yeah, I know
are being built. What are you talking about? We're talking about grass here.
Yeah, my understanding is the fans aren't so much the issue. It's just that there's all sorts of issues with drainage and the actual construction. If you lower the surface, if you lower the floor of the Rogers Center, you've got to do work around the outside. I mean, that it's not just as easy as let's throw grass down and stick
that.
Some fans on it.
Years?
Yeah, no, look, hey, you're talking to somebody who's wanted grass in this place for 5 years. I can't disagree with you on that. I can't disagree with you on that at all. It's not my money, though. If it was me, I would have had grass there. Well, if it was me, I have a new ballpark, but it's not me. Where are we going to go here? Squeeze one more caller in before we break. Let's go to John Whitby. You're in Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What's up, John?
Hi, Jeff. Why are we worried about the outfield? Pompey showed he can hit doubles. We can put him in left or center.
Oh, good. John. John. Anthony Ghost hasn't shown that he can hit. He's a great defender.
Can run.
Well, yeah, he can run, but he hasn't shown he can hit. He can run all day, but we're not putting together a men's 4x4 relay team here. We're putting together a baseball. And Dalton Pompey, let's not get carried away. Dalton Pompey needs a full year at AAA.
I think he can make it.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, John. I can't I can't agree with you on that. I mean, it'd be great if he did, but I don't think if you're the Blue Jays, you can go into the season saying that we're looking at Dalton Pompey as a starter. I sure don't want that. And with all due respect to Dalton Pompey, I damn sure if I have to have a choice between Dalton Pompey or Melky Cabrera, I know which decision I'm making. Now, it may be different 2 years down the road, but for next year opening day, yeah, I'm taking Melky 105 times out of 100. The Maple Leafs wrap up the preseason tonight at the Air Canada Center against the Detroit Red Wings. They spent 3 days in Collingwood bonding Gord Stellick is co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And, Gord Stellick's going to join us at 10 o'clock. We'll get you set for tonight's game, which we'll have on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And then a real treat, 10:30, Boomer Esiason of the NFL and CBS will join us. We'll run through the NFL weekend ahead. This is the Jeff Blair Show, and this is Sportsnet 590 The Fan.